This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 361 for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. It's a lot of 20s in there. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Brock at Vola. You can find him at The Cat Volver and all the social media that matters. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
All right. Going along.
Everybody's just chugging along. We have reached the bubble phase. I'm not sure if you've heard about this, but here in Nova Scotia, with the COVID-19 restrictions being slightly loosened, people can now bubble with another family. So, for example, I think it might be my sister and my mom, but like you can go and visit with a friend, a close friend or family, and be able to hang out and just be together. But then that's it. You only get the one household that you have to pair up with. So most of the times you're seeing like, you know, in-laws or, you know, sisters and brothers and like people in the immediate family kind of teaming up, because it allows parents to maybe help out with, you know, all the different things that are going on. But yeah, it's been interesting to see the gradual change. You know, I do feel that some people's spirits are definitely higher. And I have to share this one story that I saw on Instagram. I don't remember who designed it, but it's a hug tarp. Have you seen this?
No. So, I have an idea. Go ahead.
So it's a giant plastic tarp with four sleeves in it. Two go one way, two go the other. And so you hang it from like a tree or a clothesline, and it puts a giant plastic barrier between you and the person that you want to hug.
Yeah.
And then you basically just hug with a giant piece of plastic.
Yeah, just through the tarp.
Anyway, it looks ridiculous, but I'm imagining it's probably fulfilling a decent need for people. And I've seen a bunch of different things on social media as things have started to open up. Another goofy one that I saw was a cafe in Germany was giving people hats with pool noodles stuck to them.
Yes, to keep them apart.
Yeah, so if I've got a 3-foot pool noodle coming out of my forehead like a unicorn, and you do as well, then that means as long as the pool noodles do not touch, then we are 6 feet apart. And I thought that was odd. But
there's one, there's in Florida, they showed on the national news that, bars are reopening. Let's put that aside. But they put people in, basically it looks like giant, the really super thick inner tubes that look like monster truck tires.
Right.
And then they like, there's like a little table and they cut out the middle and people climb into the middle. So they're literally just walking around the bar with their quote unquote table wrapped around them, thus forcing them not to like actually like get close enough, because they'll just bump things. And so like they show people just walking around with those, and if they walk up to somebody else, they bump into their inner tube and it forces both of them to be that far apart. And so that was one of the few things I was like, well, at least that's sort of like in place. And those sort of things really remind me of a short-lived show with Lee Pace done by Barry Sonnenfeld called Pushing Daisies, which was awesome. It was a fun little like magical realism where the main character like could touch dead people and they'd come to life, but if he touches them again, they would die. They would be dead and dead for good. And basically one of the other main cast members, he brings back to life and he can never touch that person again or else they will be dead. And so throughout the rest of the series, when he wants to interact with that person, like he has to like throw up some like plastic, or like he has like rubber gloves, and in his car, he literally built a divider from passenger and driver seat so that he could like wave at that person and that person could travel with him and that sort of stuff. So when you talked about the hug tarp, I was like, oh, the pie maker, the poor pie maker. He's feeling COVID-19 even more now, because he used to be able to touch other people. Now he can't touch anybody. I can see those types of things coming out, and that's, it's interesting, because once you you headed into the entire uncertainty of things, I think most people would say, and I agree that without an end date in mind, you really have a sense of walking through a fog and you don't really know mm-hmm. where you're going. Whereas now, if you can see, like, you know, a little blinking beacon somewhere in the fog and you don't know for sure when you're going to get over there and you can't judge the distance well, but you have an idea that there's something out there and you're going to go towards it, you know, safety wise. And so that's what I think a lot of people can cling to, and it helps a lot having that in mind, because when you really get down to brass tacks with a lot of stuff, like, and you press into other things, you're like, well, I don't even know how this is fun. You know, like, it's funny that things like ESPN are even trying to keep their business open at this point, and they're talking about sports that don't exist, and they have to basically say, well, if they play a baseball season, if they play a hockey season, you know. So it's like, okay, cool, like, your elements of stuff still has a lot of murkiness to it, but functionality of society is slowly wandering towards the beacon, and then at some point maybe that'll suss out the darkness. So very metaphorical today, honestly. I'm a metaphorical person anyway, but
yeah. Yeah, I noticed that with some of the city parks and beaches and things now being open, we've had a late spring here in Nova Scotia anyway, so it's only just in the last week where it started to hit like 15 degrees on a regular basis, which is, I don't know, something mid-50s, I guess. So still cool, but still sunny and nice and fresh air and stuff like that. And so the combination of things being reopened and the nice weather finally hitting... Because we had snow just like last week or the week before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So nothing that stayed, but like cold enough that there's snow coming out of the sky still. And you're just like, oh, yeah. Wow, it's May. And normally, yeah. And that's late. Normally mid-April is kind of like where that stops. But yeah, there's been some freak weather systems coming by. And it's one of those things where, you know, I can feel myself just like itching to be outside and away from computer screens and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. And I've been reading outside quite a bit, even if it's not quite warm enough to, like, you know, go out and have a pleasant run, because it's still like really windy and cold and stuff. But sitting on the back deck in the sun out of the wind, it's actually been quite nice. And actually, I'll talk a little bit more about what I've been reading a little bit later in the show. However, we do have an email from a listener, which is always fun to kick off at the start of the show. It's from Charlie Donnell. A long time ago is the subject of the email. Hi, Joel and wonderful co-host. I love this podcast and the Spun Chunks. Well, thanks very much. A little while back, I was listening to an episode of The Citadel Cafe where you were talking about Star Wars Rebels, and you mentioned how Star Wars history is a clean slate. With the Mandalorian featuring Baby Yoda, quote-unquote, I was wondering what you think of having these potential prequels dive into the history of Yoda's race, Charlie. So I think what Charlie is getting at is a conversation that it might have even been you and I, Brockett, that had this. I was referring to the idea of additional Star Wars universe franchises going back so far as to like the Old Republic or earlier, so that the current canon of characters and mythology just doesn't matter. They would have a clean slate and be able to do whatever they want. And if they did that, would we want to see more about the race that Yoda belongs to, as well as the child? And in that light, I think they would be smart to steer away from any details about whatever race Yoda and the child happened to be. Just give me something new. I don't need to see Wookiees and Yoda, and, you know, obviously we're not going to see things like astromech droids. Like, the technology, I think, is going to be an easier thing for them to spin back, but I don't want to see, kind of like, outside of humans, classical aliens, I don't think we need to see quite a lot of, especially if they're main characters. I'm okay with like little nods to things, but I think they'd be better to have a full-on clean slate of new inventive worlds and ships and cultures and things. You may be able to get away with it in an Easter egg. Like, one of the things that's so nice about Yoda and the baby Yoda, the child in the Mandalorian, is their rarity. Like, you've only ever seen three, I think, in the Star Wars universe. You've got Yoda, you've got the child, and then you've got one other, I think it was Yaddle is the character name, and they're in the one of the scenes in The Phantom Menace next to Yoda. I think it's at the end, in the parade. But there's another character that has that same sort of like species look. But that's it. And I think one of the things that keeps Yoda so mystical and the child so mysterious in terms of where they come from is how little we know. And I think that's an excellent tool. I don't necessarily need them to explain everything. How do you feel about having more, I guess, unraveled about baby Yoda or just the Yoda race in general?
It's tricky because so we're so human centric and at this point I guess droid centric that if a droid or a human like is on screen, it's like, yeah, it's fine. To the point where like when the clones were on, you're like, oh god, there's billions of clones, but that's not played out. But like it's interesting, you have one tiny Yoda race creature and people are like, oh man, Yoda, baby Yoda. And the tricky part is, well, then they leaned further by giving baby Yoda force power. So, okay. So now you've checked two boxes and now you can't really dissect yourself from Yoda at all. But like if it was literally just Yoda's race and it didn't have force powers, people probably still call it baby Yoda because we don't really know much about that race, but it would still be like, okay, you know, like if another Wookiee walks on screen, like at this point, we've seen enough Wookiees that it's not all of them are Chewbacca. Right. And if you do a good enough job, you can well define them. But it's tricky because, like you say, there's a lot of mystique and mystery and like interesting intrigue about like that race because we've only really seen it from Yoda. So it's weird. Like if, like to me, it's almost like, you know, God, I'm so tired of seeing friggin' humanoids in every part of the galaxy, even though, you know, like if you go back to the Old Republic, you would think like at some point in time they're not all going to be like, you know, like some other race is going to dominate the universe, right? But probably not because humanity. But I think the thing is with that particular race, with Yoda's particular race, it is so entirely tied to that character. It's even trickier than just having another Greedo race. Sorry, I don't know enough of Star Wars to really get the races down, but you know, like you're going to do if you're a casual fan of certain elements of the universe, you're going to say, oh, that's a Jabba race, that's a Greedo race, that's a Yoda race. And even though you might see more of them, they're so defined by that one main big character.
Yeah, when people see a Hutt, they don't necessarily think, oh, that's a Hutt. They think, oh, that looks like Jabba. Like they associate it with the main character. Yeah,
exactly. So I think that's the tricky part is like what we've seen throughout the Clone Wars cartoons and some of the other cartoons that there's far more races than even like the original prequels the original trilogy and the prequels gave us. And then, of course, the new trilogy has given us 7 through 9. So if you really want to count those 1 through 9 as canon within those, there's still far more races that we've seen in ancillary, you know, like fiction and whatnot. And The Mandalorian is one of those where it's so popular now that anything that they bring up, obviously, is going to probably spin off or blow up to some degree. So, it's hard. Part of me is like, you know, if you've got a good story, have a whole like episode of like a billion of these Yoda people, find out about them. But then at the same time, it's like, I do get that there's some times where you just like, I really have enjoyed recently when the rules of a story are not necessarily all laid out unless you need it for the story. Mm-hmm. So for instance, like origin movies and series and stuff like that still are very bankable in Hollywood because people come to them. But to me, it's almost frustrating to the point of like, I don't need to see all the mechanics behind things. And it's also one of the reasons why I hate prequels, because then it's just basically all nothing but mechanics leading to the main course of things. But Mando is technically a prequel now that the new trilogy exists, because it's between original and it's between 6 and 7. So it's like anything they do in Mandalorian, somebody out there is going to be like, you know, writing down and being like, that doesn't sync up with the whole Rey Kylo trilogy. So they're already in a tricky spot as far as being a prequel. But I think because of the popularity of the Baby Yoda character, sadly, I don't think they're going to we're going to be able to avoid finding out more about that race. There's just going to be something. Like, it would be lovely, but I think the sensibilities nowadays are almost to lean too hard into giving too much until it's done.
Yeah, satisfying the fans when they all have these questions and then answering all the questions. And it's really, it's fans not knowing what they want sort of thing. I feel I know we're going to get into some more details behind the child, because that's the mission. Like, that's what the Mandalorian is going to be doing next season. That's what they established in the finale of season one. However, I hope they focus on just the child and not like the Yoda race in general. Eventually, they're probably going to figure out that it's, you know, somehow tied to Yoda, whether it's race or whatever. I have some theories that I won't get into right now, but I think that if they stick to just the individual rather than spiraling out into the race and where they're from and all this kind of stuff and trying to find his people, then I think that would be a better way to handle it. But I mean, who knows? It's in good hands. I mean, John Favreau is great. I really enjoyed the first season. I know Bryce Dallas Howard is coming back to direct another episode in season two. So all that kind of stuff sounds fantastic to me. So I'm on board. Something that does make me feel safer about The Mandalorian is that the storytelling pace is much similar to the original trilogy than any of the other ones. Having recently watched Rise of Skywalker last weekend, the pace of that movie is frantic compared to the original Star Wars movies. Even compared to Force Awakens, it's way, way faster. And I think The Mandalorian has this really nice way of slowing things down and telling a story on the beats where it matters, you know? And I feel like if they've got that kind of pace now, I don't see them doing this hyper dump of like information about the child all at once. And if we do get it, it's hopefully going to be trickled over the next season. I hope they just don't do like a one-off kind of like, and we solved it. It's like, well, that sucks.
Don't want a end of series Game of Thrones where suddenly the storytelling mechanics of it get a little mismatched and propelled with jet fuel.
No thank you. But speaking of Star Wars, actually, that's what I've been trying to get into, and I've been trying to get into this since it came out. So Star Wars The Clone Wars season 7 is on Disney Plus, and I've been wanting to watch some more sci-fi and easy stuff on the brain, and I've been trying to get into the season 7, and I've been having a hard time, and I haven't talked about it on the show because until now I haven't had anything really nice to say about it. So I thought, well, I don't really want to put more negativity out into the internet, but so we're not going to get into any spoilers on season 7. I've only seen the first 4 episodes, but it's taken me 4 weeks or more to even get that far. It's just been rough. Like, The first 4 episodes are filing into the well-known trope now that most streaming services are falling into, which is we've got a new season of 12 episodes, but we're going to take the first 4 to even bother to get going. And it's horribly frustrating. I think it's a cardinal sin when it's season 7 of a series. Like, people know what to expect with Clone Wars. I mean, it's been around since 2003. I really don't think they needed to spend the first 4 episodes reintroducing the idea of what the show is about and how these characters are interacting. And, you know, I found frustrating, but also it's so juvenile in the first 4 episodes. And again, I can't judge it past this, but like the first 2 episodes, especially, like, I was done with the Bad Batch 5 minutes after they arrived. And I was like, oh, this is just a terrible cluster of incredibly cartoony stereotypes that do not need to be included in the show. Like, have an elite squad, great, but make them cool, like Rex and Echo, and I can't remember some of the other clone names because it's been a while, but like, these clones, yeah, fives, exactly. These clones developed like personalities, and you get to know them as individual characters, and you could separate them because of how they did their hair or like what their armor was like, and you got to know them, and the Jedi generals started to have relationships, like Cody, I think, was one of the commanders that Obi-Wan Kenobi used to deal with all the time.
Yeah,
and I always found that kind of stuff really cool. And rather than focusing on that for the first 4 episodes, they introduce these 4 like bad batch of clones. That's how they got their name. So they don't look like clones. They're all different body types, and they've got weird strength and powers, and one guy's super strong, and the other guy's like a sniper. They're basically an ensemble superhero team from the 80s, and it's like smack you over the head. And it's all written for eight-year-olds. Like, the big strong guy just runs around chuckling like Michelangelo and doing goofy stuff and doing things that you just can't do in a laser fight, like run headstrong like a bull into a bunch of battle droids that apparently can't shoot the broadside of a barn. Like, it just, none of it felt at all like the peril that we were used to seeing in the series, because in seasons 5 and 6, like, it got serious. And so, yeah. Because the show had matured with its audience. And so this is what I felt so frustrated, is that just generously, let's just say that your youngest viewer in 2009 at the end of the series of season 6 was, to say, 8 years old. So your youngest viewer is still coming in at 8 years old at 2009. They're 17 now. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, your audience that started with you in 2003, they're in their 20s. Yeah. Like right for an audience that appreciates it, you know.
They're drinking as they watch these now.
Yeah, exactly.
Legally, so, I should say.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, throw me a bone. Like, I mean granted, I'm 41, you know, and I'm still into Star Wars and still watching cartoons, but that's because these cartoons very often, as Rebels did and as the Clone Wars did back in the day, other cartoons like Avatar The Last Airbender, Legend of Korra, they mature with their audience. So they aim them at the 10-year-olds at first, but 4 seasons later, they're aiming them at 14-year-olds because those are the ones that are invested. Similar to the Harry Potter series, you know, like aimed at 10-year-olds in the first, and then the last one was scary for kids, you know, like you gotta, your audience is growing. And I feel like they could have done that and just picked up right where we left off. You know, they have this great thing that I love about the Clone Wars, where they start off with that like 1930s or 50s serial, kind of like,
yeah,
War on Geonosis. And then just, they kind of go into the whole spiel, and they could catch you up in 30 seconds. Yeah. They could catch you up in 30 seconds. It's like, you know, it's been many months since blah, 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 blah. And then, like, you know, 45 seconds later, you're like, yep, cool, I know right where we are. Like, that's all I needed.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that at all. Now, all that said, like, it's still well animated. It's better animated, I think, than Clone Wars was previously, because, of course, technology has changed and animation has changed and all that kind of stuff. I really like the design. I think the characters look and move, you know, great. Lightsabers and Star Wars and battles and all that kind of stuff, that all works fine. CG cartoons make it very easy to have big battles, you know, and so now that I'm past the Bad Batch stuff, I feel like at the end of the episode 4, it was kind of maybe not the last time I'm going to see them, but probably the last time I'm going to see them for a little while, as I think the arc is going to shift. But at the end of that, it, you know, you had a big battle, you had some Jedi commanding a bunch of clones, you had like the ships deploying, you had the ground fighting, you had a small covert op team on another droid battleship. Like, so all the things that you expect from a Star Wars like climax of a situation. And that, right. I really enjoyed it. You know, you get to see Anakin be angry Anakin, which is something we started to see in the Clone Wars in season 5 and 6. And so we're starting to see a little bit more of that now. And his tactics are different when Obi-Wan's not looking. And there's a lot of stuff that's going on that I think is really cool. But like, why didn't you lead with like episode 4 could have been episode 1. Could have been episode 1. And I would not have mattered. Now, there's little things that they get in there, like getting Echo back. You know, they had the droid army had kidnapped a clone, and they were using him to create some sort of algorithm to predict the clone's movements. And so getting him back was a key thing. But like, you could have written that into some other episode. It didn't have to take 4 episodes to just to get Echo back, you know. And like I said, it's good. It's good. And I'm going to keep watching. It redeemed itself in episode 4. But I'm 4 episodes in out of 12, and there's still no Ahsoka. Like, she's all over the marketing. And, you know, and it's become hard now, even just looking for title card art for this week's episode on the podcast. I was trying to avoid spoilers, because you look for images, and it's like, oh, that's an image from probably an episode I haven't seen. So I just went with the poster, because I know from the trailer that Darth Maul's in it. And spoilers, Darth Maul dies in Rebels. so I know he doesn't die in this. Right. So hence your problem. Prequels, gotta love them. Exactly. You know, so they're going back and doing this all again, you know, and he's like, well, Darth Maul's back, but like, I mean, he's not going to die. So that's kind of, you know, frustrating. So yeah, it's one of those things where, I'm looking forward to it now that I think it feels like the narrative is shifting and we're going to get into more Ahsoka stuff, which is why I started watching in the first place. She's probably one of my favorite Star Wars characters.
Yes. She's my number two. She rose.
Who was your number one?
Incredibly high up the ranks. Luke with an asterisk. I love Luke, and I understand. I'm a Last Jedi defender, so I absolutely love Last Jedi. And there's a lot of elements of Luke in Last Jedi that quite literally can bring tears to my eyes. Just, I mean, you can't, it doesn't matter what you do with that character. There's still elements of that character that just bleed through and just bleed so poetically on the screen. But overall, I would say he's been my favorite, but Ahsoka now is to a point where, like, I can see how somebody who's not a fan of her is like, God, it's oversaturated. And that's how I've always felt about, like, certain characters like Chewie or Boba Fett, where I always thought like they were best as like side characters or like mysterious characters. And the more you get into them, the more you're like super annoyed that they're there, because you're like, whatever. But Ahsoka, I think, has really deserved it, because she has come on so elegantly and slowly throughout the Clone Wars series, and has showed up in a lot more stuff. And back to the Mandalorian, there are rumors of potentially her making some appearances and some of that. So that's all very interesting to me. Obviously, as a big Ahsoka fan, and so yeah, I basically asked my friend Adam, who watched all of Clone Wars, and I basically skipped around after I plowed through a couple seasons and just tried to read the synopsis of the episode or like Googled top 10 episodes of Clone Wars and just watched those, because I just got so bogged down in like the 20 episode arcs, and sometimes there were arcs on planets of people I just did not care about. And anyway, so the new season came out and he asked me if I watched it. I was like, I don't know. And I was like, is it any good? He's like, yeah, oh man, yeah, there's, I mean, like, you really gotta watch the ending of it. I was like, okay, well, what's Ahsoka in? He's like, well, she starts up in episode 6, but you just gotta watch the last 4 episodes for sure. And I was like, oh, I'll watch the Ahsoka stuff. And that's the arc you're about to get into. And it's got Ahsoka. Sorry, spoiler. She's in episode 5. But for me personally, I only got through, I think, like an episode and a half. And then I just went to the last 4. So I didn't even watch the first 4 you mentioned, because as soon as I saw what it was going to be, I was like, nope, not going to be. I'm not going to take the time to watch these. I wasn't interested in that element of the Clone War. The clones of the Clone Wars have never been interesting to me. The most interesting they ever got was when they showed up later in Rebels.
Rebels.
To some degree. And not to get too... Well, I don't know. At this point, I have no idea what would be considered spoilerific for Rebels, but I just want to talk to you once you're done with the last season of Clone Wars. Nice. There's some stuff in... So my buddy Adam really thinks, he listens to a lot of podcasts by creators about stuff that he likes, and he reads stuff. So he will like oftentimes like kind of bring some of his thoughts, but also stuff he like susses through with the creators. And he really, really got the vibe that basically the main people, like when Disney approached them or they approached Disney, whoever it was they wanted to do the last 4 episodes. And the last 4 episodes of Clone Wars season 7 feel like a movie.
Right.
And then they were like, well, why not do like a season? So the 8 before it are kind of just like, we're doing these
tagged
so
on.
That we get picked up by Disney, so that Disney gives us the money that we want to do the last 4.
Right.
And the last 4 have, I would say the last 4 really lean into the best things you can do in a prequel. I hate prequels. But right. there are elements of things you can do in a prequel that I feel like are justified, because they use the confined box that they're stuck in. Because, you know, like you just said, Darth Maul's in the trailer, great, but I kind of know where Darth Maul's going to end up. So what the hell is he going to do in this box? And so you get to see somebody basically write and create with characters that, you know, you have point A and you have point C, but the B, you're like, what the hell is in this magical puzzle box? And so that's what's really interesting. I think they leaned into it well. I really enjoyed it. I thought the last four episodes were fantastic. The episode you're about to start, I think I got all the way through. And then I started the next episode. And I was like, no, I'm just going to go to the last four. Adam tried to warn me. He knew how I was. And that I would just not get to it. I would just like quit and never come back to it potentially. And he's like, just go, just skip to the episode. What would it be? It
was probably 10. Eight.
10 8 yeah I think yeah. 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and
so
I'm even being there. Careful because like of course whether it's all being laid out for you on Disney Plus, it was being released one episode at a time, but now it's all available cuz I waited. When I'm looking through the list, I have to be careful cuz it's like, oh, I don't, the thumbnails just like it's a key moment with, you know, a character. So I knew that Ahsoka was coming up because I saw her, you know, at the corner of my eye in the thumbnail. And Disney Plus is not doing a great job of remembering where I was. Like if I go into Disney Plus and start it up like today, it's gonna throw me into season one instead of picking up where I left off in season seven. Even when I go into the season seven list, it won't say, oh, you've watched these first three. Like I have to remember where I was. I've even gone so far as to go back to like the last five, you know, the last 3 minutes of an episode just to kind of like, oh, right. Okay. That's where I left off. Cause I just, like I said, I'm not binging it. It's not grabbed me. I watch like one a week, you know, one every other day, depending on whether I've got other things on my list. Like generally the last of the while, because I've been spending more time outside, a lot of time in the wintertime, I end up, you know, hanging out with Netflix or, you know, my iPad Pro when I'm eating, watching YouTube mostly. And so now it's just like, well, I'll just watch like a short 20 minute thing and then I'll go outside and read at lunch or, you know, or even it's now it's, I had a meal outside on the patio just a couple days ago. So like it's even to the point now where I can not be in front of the TV and be outside eating, which is, it's very pleasant. So, I've been watching shorter things. Like I've not been sitting down for big, like hour long things. And so the cartoons are great because, when the YouTube is kind of like in between, when content creators haven't put up their next thing, then I can just grab a quick 20 minute episode. And I'm actually going to be looking for more because I want more stuff. Like that's short like that to watch. Like I find right now, I find when I want a digital piece of entertainment, I'm finding the 20 to 30 minute window is much more palpable than like a 2 hour sure. movie. Like even when
I have so many suggestions for you, Joel.
So much anime, I'm sure.
Well, no, honestly, the first one I was going to say is you can just scroll over within Disney Plus and check out two seasons and it's done. Each season, I think, well, it's, the seasons might be 20 each, but Gravity Falls, two seasons and it's done.
Oh, is that on Disney Plus? Arc.
Yep.
Cool. I've heard good things about that.
It's you can finally see what that piece of art you drew that I went gaga over, and you're like, I don't know what that is. And I was like, right. Oh, you're killing me, Joel. Yeah. You're killing me.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was like Mr. Money something in a pyramid. I can't remember.
Bill Cipher. Yeah,
yeah, Bill Cipher. Yeah,
and he's the other character. Yeah. So yeah. That's that I would highly recommend because this is one of the shows where, like you were going back when you originally talked about the Clone Wars season seven, like when we were growing up, ha ha ha. You always talk about this when you're older, how things were better. But not even that. You can go far. I mean, Avatar: Last Airbender, whole series is now on Netflix.
Now on Netflix. Fantastic. Saw that today. Yep,
it's phenomenal. And the thing about that is, like you say, it grows with its audience. But at the same time, from episode one to the ending, you could say it doesn't really change much. Tonally, writing, character development, like from point one to the end. It still has a cohesiveness and it does dramatically change just to like draw people in or whatever. And then at the same time, from the first episode to the end, adults could watch it with their kids and see depth in characters from point one to the end, that their children would eventually see or would see on a rewatch or whatever. And there's some cartoons out there that I found that still lean into that. I'll take a shot. I feel like a lot of Cartoon Network I've seen is not like that. A lot of Cartoon Network is like, what's the big splashy thing? Like I've never been a SpongeBob SquarePants fan. I understand there's a lot of merits to it, but to me that was all about like the Pee-wee Herman, Pee-wee's Playhouse, like loud, squeaky, popping, bouncing, jumping, throw some jokes around, that sort of stuff. But like the cohesion of a story, like Tailspin, DuckTales, Avatar The Last Airbender, these sort of things where you're like, you have sort of a better grounded cohesive story with some arcs, and there are still some great shows out there, and Gravity Falls is just one of those that two seasons and it's done. I mean, you don't even have to like now I think, oh man, I'd love to rewatch Darkwing Duck, and I'm like, man, that's like 60 episodes, but like, do you have like the time to rewatch 60 episodes when you have 6,000 episodes of shows you've never seen that you want to see? So,
well, that's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, anyway, segueing back, but, the Clone Wars, I think season 7 is got a little, Disney executified, with those first, two arcs. But that last one, and this is actually kind of in the face of what you just said, that those last four episodes, Joel, if you sit down just to watch the first one of the last four, I don't know that you're going to want to be able to like stop it and then come back. Like, you're going to be like salivating to watch the next 20, then the next 20, and then the next 20 until you get through those four. Cause it feels, and even, yeah, it just flows really well. Like a film. So, cool. Which is cool because I think originally when they did the CGI, they released the Clone Wars film, and then they started the series, and so now that kind of ends in a movie, even though they're four episodes, but yeah, it's quite good. The last four were very, very good. I will save other thoughts I have for it and what it means towards a greater Star Wars universe to when you're finished, so we can talk more.
Yeah, no, there's going to be a part two. Much, I find that with these series that I quite like The Dragon Prince and some of the other cartoons that we've talked about, like Troll Hunters, and on the show in general, not just you and I, but like just on the show, on the Citadel Cafe in general, the larger cartoons, I tend to come to them in two parts. Usually it's about first impressions in the first handful of episodes and how I'm feeling about the introduction of the world. And then at the end, it's like, all right, well, we can get into a full on spoiler cast and just like, you know, not have to tiptoe around things and stuff like that. So,
yeah, those are both good examples of what I was trying to say too. Like, those mm-hmm. are ones that honor multiple tiers of audience and storytelling as mm-hmm. well. Troll Hunters and Dragon Prince. So,
So the other thing that I've been doing, as I mentioned, is reading a lot outside, and I do want to kind of just reiterate how much I'm enjoying World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 3. I mentioned this on the show last week, but I hadn't really gotten that far into it. I'm almost done now. I'm actually to the point where I'm kind of slowing down, because when it's over, there are no more. I can't order Volume 4 on Amazon because it doesn't exist. I don't know if they're writing it. I hope they are. Because it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. It's a different pace. Things are moving a lot faster now that we're into, essentially, I'm into the point where World of Warcraft exists. So World of Warcraft, as far as the timeline is concerned, starts around 25 years after the Dark Portal arrives. The Dark Portal being the thing that brings the orcs to Azeroth and sparks things like orcs versus humans, the strategy games and the lore and the First War and the Second War and all that kind of stuff. Frozen Throne, the introduction of Arthas, like all that kind of stuff has happened in this book. And I've been reading about it because it all happens like after the Dark Portal. So book one and book two had a lot of like 10,000 years before the Dark Portal, a lot of world building and faction, you know, creating and rivalries and old histories and things and racial development, all that kind of stuff. But now the beat by beat, it's like, well, this next chapter is 25 years after the Dark Portal. And this next chapter is 26 years after the Dark Portal, because things just, so much is happening all of the time in several different places. Because you end up getting into the expansions and things. But one of the really cool things, and I was contemplating reading it on the show, but it's a little bit long, is a really cool passage describing the rise of heroes within the Horde and the Alliance to meet the ever-changing threats to peace on Azeroth. And after the first couple sentences, you realize, oh, they're talking about the launch of the game. They're talking about bringing all of us in, like, because previously, it's all been about Thrall and Jaina and Arthas and the dark, you know, the Void Lords and like all the Sargeras and the bad guys and the demons and Illidan and all this kind of stuff. But now they're going into like, well, there's these heroes that vanquished this, you know, this evil being, but we don't know who they are because there was a lot of them. several million of them flooded the universe. And but it was a really nice nod to be just like, you know, and then, you know, like as things progressed, like, you know, Thrall was busy with this and our heroes were busy with the grander scheme of things. But that didn't stop, you know, I don't know what the I'm trying to like Ragnaros, you know, like that didn't stop Ragnaros, the Fire Lord, from enslaving the Iron Dwarves and needing, you know, and the Iron Dwarves kidnapping the daughter of Magni Bronzebeard, like all these smaller things needed heroes to go take care of it. Well, that's you. And yeah. And so it was really kind of cool to have this passage like reference to players because it's so memorable when you read it. Then from then on, they would say like, you know, oh, the Zandalari trolls are trying to summon the Loa of Blood to try and, you know, harness its power so they can seek their revenge on the elves. And, you know, Thrall, busy in Outland with big things like demons and Illidan, dispatched a, you know, series of heroes to go deal with the problem. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was a 5-man raid. I remember that. I remember five-man dungeon. Like, I remember doing that. And so stuff like that, I think, is really cool, especially because I have played, and most of my memory from the depth of my play comes from Warcraft Classic, Burning Crusade, the first expansion, and then Wrath of the Lich King. Then there's a gap because I sort of went through Cataclysm and I sort of didn't. And then I played quite a lot of Mists of Pandaria. So I haven't read in the book up to introducing pandas. And that's going to be really cool if I get that far. I'm not sure whether that's going to be in this book or not. But there's that history and culture of Pandaria is just so rich and so cool. And so fresh in my mind because it's the last real expansion I played seriously. I did play Warlords of Draenor with some friends, but it was like with different characters. I didn't play my main characters on it. So reading it has been just really cool. I am noticing some changes in the pacing in terms of like the way that the lore is structured. You really start to see gameplay mechanics and like boss fights and stuff. And it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's noticeable because you'd be reading about this lore and like the four horsemen of this and the Lich King would send his lich to defend this one fortress and it's like, oh right, there's the four wings of the raid, the four horsemen, and then the big bad guy in the middle, right? And you're just like,
yeah.
So the lore at this point is starting to reflect the game mechanics that they wanted to achieve, rather than the other way around, which was the lore exists and the game mechanics are being written to reinforce the lore. And I think, I mean, again, it's not a bad thing. I think what's really neat about it is that you're witnessing the part where they had no idea that World of Warcraft was going to be this huge. And so the lore was written around the mechanics at first. And then later on, they kind of had to retcon and be just like, okay, wait a minute. The lore is why people love this thing. We need to write the lore in its entirety. Like, let's just biblify this. And then we can go from here and create game experiences based on how these characters would react or what these motivations are of these factions. And so I'm reading stuff now that is older and therefore based more on the game than it was based on lore first. But it's still cool because I mean, a lot of times just like, I recognize that name. I think I went on that quest. I think I had to help that guy collect, you know, save his daughter from whoever, you know, stuff like that's kind of fun. But it's a good book. And I'm experimenting with some things in the community, from a little bit of town hall feedback I got in the Discord. And that is, we've got some affiliate links going up. So I have always had an Amazon.ca affiliate account when I was running my webcomic, but I've not done much with it in the last, I don't know, 5 years. So I've gone and signed up for a bunch of other Amazon affiliate accounts, and I'm using the one link feature on Amazon.com, which in theory should link everything together. Now, they say it's easy. I did not have that experience. However, I've got some early feedback from some people in the Discord this morning that say it seems to be working. So in addition to linking to World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 3 just on the website for show notes, I'm also going to throw up some affiliate links to the book in the show notes. So if you're interested in this, if it's something that you want to check out, if you like World of Warcraft, or I recommend these books for people that just like fantasy. Like if you just like Lord of the Rings, you just like world building with swords and axes and magic and demons, then give her. They're fantastic books. I highly recommend them. And if you're going to pick them up, some of them are on sale right now. And in the process, you could support the show a little bit along the way. If it's something you're going to buy anyway, then you know, why not? It's no extra cost to you. It's just a little bit of Jeff Bezos money goes to kind of help the podcast along a little bit. So I'll have those affiliate links up on the show notes at thecitadelcafe.com for anybody that's interested. I'm curious. I know that you are at least, I don't remember. Did you play World of Warcraft, Rocket?
I think I did a trial of it. I played I played a little bit of Warcraft 2, but the bulk of my experience in the entire universe is playthroughs of Warcraft 3.
Right.
That's when where they introduce the elves and Arthas. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say it was a real mind flip to play through the first campaign in Warcraft 3, and Arthas is like one of your special dudes. And then you go off to the area and then he gets Frostborn, and then suddenly like you're like, wait, what just happened with this dude I liked? And then like the very next campaign is like, oh, you're Arthas, but now he ain't good? Like you're like, what? So that was a real mind flip. I think I played that when it first arrived, was right in high school. So that was interesting. Blizzard's always done a really good job with a lot of that sort of stuff.
The Lich King in Arthas is a really complex character too. Like I've always known that, but you don't really get the same feeling from it in the game as you do in the book, because I didn't play Frozen Throne. Like I didn't play Warcraft 3 Frozen Throne. So I didn't know the origins. I didn't have those attachments. So just playing World of Warcraft and going through Ice Crown Citadel and stuff, like I didn't have that kind of experience that other players did. But now going back and reading it and knowing what the Lich King is, who he was before he was the Lich King, and then how Arthas kind of plays into it, and how Arthas and the Lich King were not the same being at first. Like there's a lot of really cool kind of twists and turns in how they play that. I just started the chapter in the book about the Wrath of the Lich King. It's like I just went into like that re-spooling of Arthas, kind of like putting everything back together. And so you're reminded of like the excitement, because I think I remember seeing the trailer, or at the very least hearing some fan reactions to the release of the Wrath of the Lich King trailer when it first came out. And people were just losing their minds of how cool it was. And because it's a great trailer too for the game. But it really kind of pulls at some heartstrings, and with the voiceover of, I can't remember his dad's name, but it's essentially Arthas' father talking about ruling as a king, but it's what you're seeing is the Lich King walking around and doing stuff. It's really, really, really cool stuff. So highly recommended. We'll check him out in the show notes. For the Internet Minute this week, I have another kind of promotional thing. If you're not aware, the Internet Minute is, it's brought to you by you. Normally I have links to something cool to share on the internet, but the Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will get you an invite to the member-only Discord server. There are multiple levels with different rewards like Discord roles and bonus episodes. There's a special note as of late, because everybody's spending so much time at home, all of the levels have access to the Barista Cut bonus episodes, not just tier 2, but tier 1, which is only $1 a show, $4 a month, less than a fancy latte. So if you're interested in supporting the show, you can do that at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We are currently at 20 patrons. We need to have one more to be 21 for June. I'd like to try to have one more patron every month as we roll forward. So if you want to be that one person, or if you have any questions, then feel free to reach out. I'm going to point you towards Twitch. I've been trying to do some extra streaming this month now that my computer is back and running, and we're having a ball. And I've been trying to do more frequent, shorter streams. So like 3 hours tops, but like Saturday, Sunday. I did one Friday night. I did one Tuesday morning. So some odd times. So if you're looking to pop into a really chill Twitch stream, have a good time chatting with some very, very friendly people while I plan around some stuff in Minecraft, then please feel free to check out twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. I'm having a lot of fun over there. The community is growing. People that either use their Twitch Prime sub or join on Patreon, it all comes into the same Discord. So if you are listening to this and you've got friends that are on Twitch and they don't really listen to this podcast, but they could all be in the same chat room because it all leads to my Joel Duggan Discord server. So check it out. It's twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. That wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can get more information about the show and some of the links we talked about, including those Amazon affiliate links at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod, and you can, of course, email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and now YouTube. And, of course, word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Just share it with a friend. Tell someone, hey, this is a cool podcast. You should listen to it. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I'm doing online at joelduggan.com, including my illustration and design portfolio. Pretty full up on commissions right now, but look for me to be open again probably in the mid-June for more stuff like that. So if you're interested in that, drop me a line through the website. My other podcast is all about Minecraft. It's at thespunchunks.com, and you can follow me at Joel Duggan on social media everywhere. I'm pretty easy to find. And of course, twitch.tv/JoelDuggan is where I'm hanging my hat mostly these days. Brockett, where can people find you online?
You can just look for The Cat Volver on various social medias, musings and pictures throughout the interverse, the subverse, the internet, whatever.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.